It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer, the only podcast for Notre Dame fans by Notre Dame fans. If you're looking for cogent analysis and unbiased opinions backed by careful reporting, you've come to the wrong place. For the next 20 minutes or so, you'll get a fan's perspective on the Fighting Irish without all the normal spin from the so-called professional analysts. It's Dome and Domer. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me, Ed Jordanic. And, Ed, I guess I'll kick it off that if you would have told me before the game that Deshaun would have played more than 5 minutes, I would have been nervous as a wreck. But the fact of the matter is the Irish kind of rolled and rolled early and often. I was a bit surprised. I don't know. I mean, it's exciting, but it definitely took me by surprise. I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah, I was a little surprised, too, just at how lost Texas offense seemed. And I think a lot of that was due to, we've got some really good athletes on defense, and they're obviously more comfortable with the system, and we put pressure on. But they really just could not get anything going, and that's because they are just really deficient at the quarterback position. And, I think the test for Notre Dame's defense this year, starting on Saturday, they play a pretty good quarterback. Virginia has a pretty good quarterback. But, then you get into I think we talked about this last time, the Deshaun Watsons and the kid from Navy, and obviously Cody Kessler and Kevin Hogan, of course, at the end of the year. And so there's some good, that's football these days. It all kind of starts so much with the quarterback. It's just a straw that stirs the drink. And if you have a good player at that position, you've always got a chance. And I think the flip side of this conversation is that it appears Notre Dame has a really good player at that.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I think that was the other thing that did surprise me for sure. I mean, I was thinking that, all right, this is going to be a game where we're going to probably take advantage of his running skills more than his throwing skills. And yet he came out and probably had one of the best, for himself, home openers as a starter. Throwing for, holy cow, what was it, 19 of 22? And, geez, and he looked good. I mean, it wasn't that he just threw a couple bombs and got lucky. I think you and I were both commenting before the game that, it might be a little bit nerve-wracking him trying to make those in-between throws. And if anything, he looked great all the way around. And not only the in-between throws went well, but it looked like he was making the right reads. I mean, he was throwing to the right guy. I don't remember too many passes being thrown into double coverage where our guy just made a great play.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny how quarterbacks are. I was in the car today and had the radio on Stephen A. Smith's show on satellite radio, and he had Joe Montana on. And, we all love Joe. He's just the worst interview in the world. I'm sorry. He is not broadcasting gold. He's just, he just struggles. I mean, he always has. He's always had a little trouble, being an interesting guy to listen to but that being said, I think he's always going to be in my book, the greatest quarterback of all time. But one of the interesting things about Joe Montana is that he was not necessarily the best practice player in the world. But somehow on Saturday or Sunday, when he stepped between the lines, everything got better. He just knew how to play the game. He was accurate. He made good decisions. He didn't turn the ball over. And again, I'm not comparing Malik Zaire with Joe Montana at this stage, but I am saying that there are some guys that just are that just have a different kind of switch that they turn on game days, and Zaire does seem to be that kind of a guy. And you have those kind of guys at just about every position, but it's always interesting when you've got somebody like that at quarterback who is obviously a winner. You always hear about his emotional side, but he really played under control. Emotional players sometimes, especially quarterbacks, make some bad decisions and force balls and drop the ball and do some things. And it's just really interesting to me that apparently a really cool cucumber like Everett Golson had so much trouble in the turnover department. And I hope I'm not cursing him, but a player that obviously plays with maybe a little bit more fire and passion like Malik Zaire seems to really really do the fundamentals quite well in terms of protecting the football, or at least he has in the, you know, 2.5 games so far that we've seen him play. So, you know, I'm sure there'll be mistakes down the road, but I was really impressed with the way that he, you know, managed the game, as well as his athletic ability and how well he threw the ball. I mean, Alize Jones, you know, dropped a pass. I think that was one of the incompletions.
Yeah.
And I think there might have been I think there might have been another pass that was pretty catchable. Went through didn't a pass go through Tyler Latuatua's hands or I had a bad angle on it.
Tiny bit behind him, but I mean, he should have caught it. I mean, just should have caught the ball. So, and I think I'm 100% in agreement with you. I mean, I did, you know, look, as a team, you look at it and you say, okay, look, we've done this before. And you could even argue just last year where, you know, we beat Michigan 31-0. So at the beginning of the season, you're, holy cow, man, this could be a one heck of a year. Same thing goes with this game. I mean, we don't really know how bad Texas is. And like you said, they got some quarterback struggles going on. And, you know, that's one position you really can't overcome when you got somebody struggling at that position. So it'll be interesting to see what Texas does throughout the rest of the year. But,
thing we do know is they do have their fair share of four-star athletes, right?
Exactly. So, but it's not like they're a horrible team. Exactly. Right. And I think that you're going to find the same kind of thing with Virginia, although they're clearly, I don't think you're going to see a 38-3 game. Virginia, like you say, they've got a quarterback who is good, and all it takes is for him to get hot. And if he gets through the first quarter with a little bit of confidence, doesn't get rattled, all of a sudden gets comfortable in his zone, then guys like that can be dangerous. And so, you know, wouldn't surprise me if we get behind Saturday. I mean, I'm not going to sit there and be shocked if it's 7-3 at one point.
Well, I think maybe you can draw an analogy, you know, this Virginia quarterback to the Virginia Tech quarterback. And, you know, I mean, they were right in the ball game Monday night with him at the helm, and he goes down, and, you know,
I thought the game changed.
They get their doors blown off as soon as he was off the field, so.
Right.
And that's, you know.
Yeah, and I just think that, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens on Saturday, simply because he's going to be in different situations that he hasn't seen or experienced. And that is that you might be in the second quarter playing from behind. There might be a little bit more pressure on the next drive that you take over because things didn't go so well the last drive. So, you know, I think these are the kinds of things Saturday. But like you said, it's assuring to know that he's not a guy that competes. He is a gamer. He's done it two games in a row now, going back to obviously LSU. But, you know, there's a certain aura about him when he's in the huddle and when he's coming out of the huddle and when he's in the pocket. He's not frazzled. He's not, you know, uncomfortable sitting there in the pocket, and he makes good throws.
Right.
And so, therefore, having a good offensive line like he's got.
I was just
going to
say the same thing, right?
He's got a good offensive line. There's no doubt about that. So,
the key will be how he reacts when he does have some adversity, right? When he has three or four three and outs in a row, when he, you know, throws a pick, or when one of his receivers drops an easy ball and you know, sets him back, or, you know, I mean, there'll be things that, you know, and he's going to get, I'm sure he'll get some different looks from our good friend John Tenuta this weekend. I'm sure there'll be some couple times where, you know, he'll miss a read or something and get drilled and hopefully hang on to the ball. So there'll definitely be, you know, times that, and hopefully this weekend, well, there'll be a little bit more of a challenge. But so far, you know, he seems to have a certain mental toughness that you, a lot of times you can't, you can kind of coach up, but you have to start with some raw material. And he seems to have it, which
Yeah, it definitely does. I guess the only other thing that to me is probably going to be a little bit more apparent on Saturday, because, you know, I think that people may have felt like, wow, maybe it wasn't such a bad thing to lose Tarion Falsten. But, you know, the reality of the matter is he's a guy that
there's you know, no sane person that could think that.
Well, I think that for people that don't know football, where they look at the game and they say, you know, that Adams kid's not so bad. And, you know, and the reality of the matter is we do always have that motto of next guy in, and there's depth now at Notre Dame, but there isn't somebody to replace him. And it's just the way that it is. He's a back that against good teams can bounce off people and get you 5-6 yards after the first and second hit. And I think that's going to be sorely missed in a game like Virginia.
And plus, his pad level is terrific. And if Procise and Adams are going to have issues, you know, they're going to get sawed in half a couple times the way they run the football. Now, Adams seems to be kind of more of a natural, obviously, and I'm sure they're going to work with Procise, but he just runs a little too straight up at times. And I think Kelly mentioned this in his press conference, that the end of his runs kind of look like a rugby scrum half the time, which is a good line and a good description. But I'm sorry, you know, give me 6 good running backs on your roster every year. I mean, you know, you can't have enough of them. And
that's right. You can't
replace Folston's experience either.
Now, and I just think that's going to hurt us eventually. It's going to come to light, and it's about the one thing that I'm just concerned about now. I mean, it was kind of nice to see the defensive line play the way that they did, and again, we'll get a better feel for that Saturday against Virginia. But the sore spot is certainly going to be losing Tarion, because I don't see us recovering from that. It's going to be something we got to overcome. And, you know, it's just going to be one of those things that you just hope that the difference in the game doesn't end up being that, because we are going to have those close calls. It's not like that's not going to happen.
Yeah. You know, speaking of injuries, it was kind of it was a real rough watch. I caught last night, I watched that half-hour Showtime special, you know, on behind the scenes on the team leading up, you know, to the Texas game and camp and all that. And, you know, it was Joe Schmidt that basically fell and rolled into the back of Jerron Jones's knee that put him out for the year. It was just not fun to watch. It was just really a freak play. And to tell you the truth, you know, it looked like the kind of thing that you read about that like a walk-on would do, you know, like a clumsy walk-on kind of injures a frontline player. Now, obviously, Joe Schmidt is not a clumsy walk-on, and it was in the course of a drill and, you know, that kind of thing. But it was not, it was just, you know, I mean, Jerron just never saw it coming, and it was just a total, you know, freak play where Schmidt fell to the ground and just rolled right up the back of his leg. And it's amazing to me that caused that serious damage to the knee, because it was not a, you know, it was not a violent hit at all, and it was not a situation where, you know, his leg was braced. You know, you would have thought that it might have, I mean, he did have a knee brace on, but you would have thought that it would have been something where, you know, because he almost sometimes, you know, you don't hurt yourself when you don't see it coming, you know what I mean, because you don't kind of seize up and you know, wait for the impact or whatever. But I don't know, it was rough to watch, and I feel bad for Jerron, because he obviously, in some of the footage that they showed last night, was definitely rounding into shape in camp before that happened.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's too bad, because this is the second year in a row now we've had some missing guys right to start the season, and huge, huge key guys.
So, well, that's, you know, it's really three guys that, you know, two definitely, I don't think you'd call them All-Americans, but I guarantee you, you know, if Notre Dame was in a conference, Folston and Jerron Jones would be, you know, all-conference, maybe not first team, but second team. You know, they're that kind of quality players. And Sean Crawford was, you know, we'll never know, or we'll know, you know, in a year or two, but, you know, it sounds like he was tabbed as being on the field a lot, especially in, you know, in third down situations and passing situations against teams that like to air it out. And, you know, that kind of speed and that kind of football sense that apparently he had, you know, can't be easily duplicated. So those are three frontline guys. But, hey, everybody has injuries. Clemson lost their best receiver. I think Virginia lost, you know, some guys. Yeah, I think they were reserve offensive linemen, but still, I think didn't Southern Cal already lose somebody for the year? And
yep, they did. And that's right. And I think Florida State lost somebody. They, yeah, it does. It happens. And I did want to mention Golson, by the way. I'll be honest. I was happy. I mean, I believe me, I want that kid to succeed, and he's a great kid. And it was neat to see him, have the day that he kind of had. Hopefully that'll continue for him. And as long as we don't see them in the playoffs, I'm fine. but that was kind of neat. It just goes to show what kind of dilemma was facing Brian Kelly. I mean, you look at the two guys he's choosing from, and both of them were probably top five performers on Saturday. So, give Golson credit, and I wish him all the luck in the world, and I hope he continues with everything he's doing. But that was kind of nice, definitely neat to see as I was flipping back and forth a little bit during the game. So the only other thing I was kind of interested in is the kicking game. Now, it reminded me of the Reggie Ho days watching him come out to kick. But he did solid kid, and hopefully that continues. And I didn't know a lot about him obviously prior to Saturday, but mechanics and everything look pretty good, and at least confidence from Kelly looks pretty good too. So maybe that difference is.
Yeah, I mean, no, it looked pretty good. I mean, it didn't look to me like he got the ball up as quickly as I'd like.
Height,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's one of the things.
Height wasn't there, but
yeah.
Apparently he's accurate as all get out and nails him in practice. But yeah, I guess we're going to see. But that's a weapon you'd love to have.
And, what's more important to me is the pressure kicks. The close game kicks.
Right.
I mean, the field goal that he missed. And I mean, I saw some writing. I can't remember where that seemed to indicate that Tyler Newsom had a good game. But I didn't. I mean, he kicked a couple into the end zone for touchbacks, and he had
that one out of bounds.
That kickoff was terrible. But. They didn't get any return yardage, so the punts that were fair caught or fielded obviously had some pretty good hang time because the coverage and that's that's a tribute not just to him of course but to the coverage unit. But again, it was I don't know how as a Notre Dame fan you could ask for a better first game in terms of that perfect mix between obviously blowing out kind of a traditional power that's down but obviously still has good athletes and. You would think would be pretty well coached, kind of taking care of business at home and also still having plenty of things to work on and improve on. And that's, the old, Holtzism that the most progress, can and should be made between the first and second game. I mean, we'll see this weekend when they take the show on the road, but, it wouldn't surprise me that I think this is kind of one of those teams where we're going to have, we're going to have, Monday, Tuesday spotlight is going to be on a different guy every week. Next week it might be Torrey Hunter Jr. The next week it might be Procise. The next week it might be, who knows, Anawalu or something, or Shoemaker or Redfield might have a great game and a pick. You know what I mean? Like, I think that there's a lot of talent and, like you said, depth, but so we're going to have guys that are going to be in this. This week the spotlight guys are obviously Josh Adams, right, because of his debut, and I think you'd have to throw Daniel Cage in there, who had a real solid game, that was a little bit of a question mark. And of course, Will Fuller, who his ability to just get in the end zone is just amazing to me. I mean, Notre Dame just hasn't had receivers like that really in its history. Tim Brown didn't catch 15 touchdown passes in a year. I mean, obviously the ball wasn't thrown as much in his era, but Smarja was, got the ball in the end zone a lot. But my gosh, this kid,
Right, he does, and he's got that elusive speed where it just doesn't seem like he's that fast. And next thing you know, he's behind you. And so, he looked good. The other thing I did like to see, which I think is a great sign, is just how well Zaire spread it out. It wasn't like he was throwing to Will all night long. I mean, he threw to like seven different receivers, and at one point, I think he had completed 12 passes, and of the 12, they were to seven different guys. So, that I think is a great sign. Again, it just his composure in the pocket looked really good. I was thinking that prior to the game we were going to see him rolling out, we were going to see very few drop back passes for him. And I'll tell you, I just think that combination of being able to drop back and throw like he does, and then also tuck and run like he does, and to get outside on the end and the edges like he does, I mean, wow, holy cow, if he can keep things moving and keep his composure and be as solid as he is, I'm not going to expect to have the percentages that he had in the first game, but just that whole package together, if he even continues at anywhere near that pace, is going to really put us offensively at the highest levels, I think, statistically. So, you know, hopefully that'll continue. But I do think that this Virginia game is going to, like you say, they're between the first and the second game. This is probably where we're going to see some of those chinks a little bit. But I would imagine they overcome it. You know, I'm going to say that they might be a little bit tight in the first half, but I do think they end up pulling it away. And I get the feeling in the last 8 months, the game's going to be in our control completely. Yeah. So my gut instinct
I'm not sure I'd describe Charlottesville as a hostile environment either. You know, I mean, they'll be they'll have some, I'm sure the brie at the tailgates will be pretty good. And I'm sure that there'll be some good, you know, Virginia Mountain wines and, you know, maybe some club sandwiches. You know, I think it'll be a real nice, you know, kind of laid back environment. But still, it's a really good first road test, I think, for Zaire before they have to go to Clemson. You know, I think it's a really good, kind of the next step up in terms of, you know, because it obviously gets a little bit shaky here in the next month or so in terms of quality of opponents. I mean, it's a real ramp, and there's no rest and there's no break besides UMass. You started the show talking about Kaiser. I hope they play Kaiser in the whole second string for the whole second half against UMass and get their legs as fresh as possible heading into going down to Death Valley.
Yeah,
but that's looking ahead. That's looking ahead.
Yeah, and I Georgia Tech, I mean, that's going to be the thing for me, I think. Coming out of that is where it's going to really get interesting. But because I think that's going to be a huge test for us, and that's one of those games that easily could go either way, depending upon, you know, if we turn it over a couple times or something like that. Very difficult team to play the way that they run their offense, and you know, it's going to be one of those gut check games. But you know, I'm going to go ahead and predict that we do win 35-10. I think it might be a little bit tight, but I gather that we pull away there in the end. And I just don't see them putting a lot of points on the board, but maybe 35-17. But I'd love to see 35-10.
Yeah. I think, you know, if UCLA can hang 35, 38 points on them with the freshman quarterback, and you know, I think that you know, we can do the same. So I'll say the score is going to be, I'll say my buddy Justin Yoon kicks two field goals, and I'll say it's going to be, I'll say 41-15. How's that?
Cool. Yeah, I'll take that. Either way, I'm good with any of those, even close, but a W is a W.
That's right.
And if it's 2 points, I'll take
no
it.
No injuries, right?
Yeah, no doubt. All right, good deal. We'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.